Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
We'll continue taking those voice notes on 0636880959. I've got in studio with us the mayor of Johannesburg. You may have seen him earlier on doing site inspections just to have a sense of how things are going in reservoirs. You know, we've been having water challenges. There was obviously on the back of planned maintenance. And so we'll touch on that just now. But I just want to quickly bring in the mayor. And thank you very much, Mayor Dada Morero, for coming into studio. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pimela.
Just a quick one, since we've been having this conversation around spaza shops, it would be the city that processes these applications. I know there are different levels of these registration processes.
Well, it's a joint effort between the municipality and the provincial government, because they're the ones who will be responsible at the end to issue out licenses.
Yes.
So,
where does the city's job begin and end?
Well, remember, part of the job that we have to do is in terms of building control. One, do approve the plans to build a spaza shop. It's our function.
Bylaws are ours.
Bylaws, health inspections. Between, of course, ourselves and province, because we need more capacity in doing those inspections. So, generally, that's the work that we have to be doing as the city.
I believe for some time there really wasn't quite a moratorium on how many outlets could be in one particular place. That I'm told is a discussion that's happening now. Every city will decide for itself how much we can cope with. You know, how many vendors, for instance, can be on one road? Can we give space to 10 or 15 or 100 at one given spot?
Yes.
Will that be updated information as we go along?
Yeah, I think from where we are now, we should have a sense of how many spaza shops are just around Johannesburg. Mm. So the department development planning would have consolidated those numbers. Mm. And as part of the work that they're doing on compliance, building control, health inspection, it's an important information that is required for us to be able to do our work. I may not have the actual figures at this stage, but they should have by now.
Yeah.
And of course, they'll be able to do their planning around the figures that they already have.
And so, in other words, if let's say there are, let's say, 20 houses in one street, and 15 of us want to all have a spaza shop or already have a spaza shop, and according to the capacity of the city, it's best to have maybe 5. That's what maybe we
Why we have asked our Department of Economic Development to develop a strategy. Because it has to be informed on few issues. One, does it make business sense to put it here, to allocate the spaza here? Would it be profitable? Does it make sense in one ward to have over 200 spaza shops? So all those things they'll have to take into cognizance. We have asked them to do so. And in fact, in the city, we have also went into a partnership with UNDP, United Nations, to try and they've actually offered technology as part of what they will support us on, so that we can provide technological support to the spazas as we move forward. So
my question was, if there is an oversupply, would you then prioritize South Africans? Which is what I hear a lot of the complaints are.
No.
In other words, there's an oversupply. Maybe everybody actually complies, but there's an oversupply. Would you then prioritize South Africans and say, well, sorry, we can only issue 5 licenses in this road, therefore we will prioritize South Africans?
Well, Pimela, if you look at the regulations or the Immigration Act, and I think the minister just spoke to it.
Yes.
Unless you are a foreigner and you've got a business permit too, you're going to invest 5 million. Mm. So it's unlikely that the majority of them who are here will be able to invest 5 million per spaza shop.
Yeah.
So it's unlikely, which logically means that South Africans are preferred to own the spaza shops. But if you ask me, I think it has to be a preserve of South African citizens. Mm. We have seen it work very well when we were growing up, owned by South African citizens, no issues. Mm. It's just that the new generation of young people did not take advantage of the spaza business, and we need to try and help them once again by investing in it. But naturally it would mean it will be South Africans. And if we have to prioritize, if we have to regulate the number of spaza shops, it will then come down to South African citizens.
And the question of asylum seekers, they don't have to have that 5 million, or how does that work?
Well, I'm not sure of the national regulations on other issues, but I'm told it's part of the criteria that they should have the 5 million to invest in a spaza shop, especially those that are foreign nationals. So it's quite a tricky situation.
All right. So let's get into the issue of water. There was an announcement by the city as well as Randwater that there is maintenance planned for a particular period because, infrastructure, as we've been discussing, has been lacking in its proper maintenance plan and schedule. So you decided to take this time to allow for it to happen, being a December where industry is shutting down and all of that. Are we sticking to the schedule?
Yes, we are. You know that we started on the 13th, then we concluded on the 15th, on the 16th, sorry. So it was a three-day program. And the idea there was to reconfigure some of the engine rooms at the Akenhof pumping station to ensure that it can cover a wide range of areas. And you'd know that for the past few years, we've been battling with Akenhof. Mm. And of course, Akenhof was not designed to service a huge population. It was designed basically to service a particular section of society as part of the apartheid spatial planning. Now we have to unbundle that by addressing the engine rooms. Mm. So we have done that part, and we think Randwater has done almost everything that needed to be done. Mm. What we've been faced with now is pumping water into the reservoirs, which has actually being where the delay has been. And I think from the 16th at night, we started pumping, and we're still pumping even today, because reservoirs at least has to be at around 60 and above percent for us to be able to provide water to all the areas where the reservoirs are. So that's what we've been trying to do. And at times you'll be able to fill it to 60% capacity, but within hours, it has dropped to 20%, so we have to build it up once again. So with the inspection that we did today, we think that we're comfortable in saying by weekend, all areas which were affected by the 3 days shutdown will now have water fully by the weekend.
Please just clarify for those who are not clear. I think Jackals Creek earlier on had an issue.
Yes.
How far are we with that issue, and can we articulate what exactly the problem was there?
I think around 5, they said the water is now back.
Okay.
What the engineers suspected was what they call a butterfly valve that was not functioning properly. Mm-hmm. And it will close it for long hours. It was closed, so they couldn't get water through. Mm. They tried manipulating it. They tried to even go inside and do some welding on it so that it stays open. But eventually around 5 or so, they were able to succeed, and the water was running through to Jekyll Creek, which meant that area of Honeydew, which is supplied by the Honeydew Reservoir, it means it was almost 90% having supply of water, because the problem at that time was only Jekyll Creek.
So Akenhof is part of what you were dealing with this particular maintenance plan. We've been having these problems with losses of water because of infrastructure problems. As far as we are concerned with what you are doing now, are we likely to see another big, water cut period because of another maintenance, planned maintenance that you're working on?
Between ourselves and Randwater, we are likely not to see much, except internally at Joburg Water, where we might have to start the projects on refurbishments of pipes, depending how long those pipes are, changing of valves. So that type of work will constantly disrupt water supply, possibly not for longer periods, but it's work that we might have to do. For example, we are concerned about what we have seen in Protea Glen. I think they stayed about 9 days without water. But what we also found was that there's a lot of pipes that are running underneath the houses of people, which means people actually encroached as they extended their properties. And majority of the valves are actually under the houses. And if we have to replace the valves, it means we might have to demolish in other areas. So those are some of the things that we are beginning to pick up and that needs to be addressed quite seriously. And I think it's also important that the media also helps us to constantly remind our people that encroaching has dire consequences. It can affect the infrastructure quite seriously. So I'm just making an example. So if we were to deal now with Protea Glen, if there's no water supply or we have to change pipes, it means the whole area will be disrupted, including demolishing of some of the extensions.
Somewhere along the line, though, Mayor, it's an issue of zoning and someone approving some plans. Ordinarily, what happens? Is it that people are just extending without even going to the municipality for approval? Or is it that between, whether it's an engineer, whether it is a construction company, they themselves are part of the corruption that allows for those buildings to be approved?
That could be a whole lot of issues. But what I've seen, some of the structures there, I don't think any municipality planning department would have approved. The nature in which the plans are. I mean, you look at some of the extensions, where the window is, where the door is, naturally municipality would not have approved. So you find that the developer did build until to a certain stage, and the people decided to extend because they took advantage of the availability of land just behind their properties. So you have those type of situations that we have to correct. And unfortunately, as we correct them, it's not going to be easy. There will be resistance, there will be fights, but we have to do them. Otherwise, into the future, we're going to have much bigger problems in protecting and defending our infrastructure.
Mayor, there's a question around Coronationville. In fact, I think several times they've asked us this question on the show. They're saying they still don't have clear reasons. So their shortage of water has been before this maintenance, and they don't have clear answers from Joburg Water around. Apparently, they've had meetings, but nothing concrete that explains why they're struggling to get water as opposed to an adjacent informal settlement that gets water.
Well, the reservoir, that is true. Coronation has been battling for some time.
Yes.
In fact, you'd find that we are able to bypass the system and provide water in the evening.
Yes.
And in the morning, they don't have water.
Yes.
There's a lot of leaks in the reservoir, which is affecting us in terms of our ability to provide constant water. And that is why we resort to bypassing of the system.
Which reservoir is this?
It should be Hestel, if I'm not wrong.
Okay.
And that is why if you go to Brixton now, we're building a new reservoir, which we think once it's delivered in April, the problems will end. And then at that time, we'll then be able to try and invest some money in restoring the other reservoir so that there's sufficient water to be supplied in that area.
So it's a leak in the actual
there's
reservoir?
There's a lot of leaks in that reservoir, which is affecting constant supply, and we have to resort to bypassing from time to time. And we are also going to be restoring and refurbishing that reservoir post-April. In April, we're focusing on the bigger one. And once that is done, we think it will be much, much better. But it's true. Coronation has been very challenging for the last year or so, in fact, in trying to ensure that the people there receive water supply.
And the issue of the adjacent area, how does that work?
Well, you'll find that the informal settlement, there's a lot of illegal connections.
Got you.
And as a result of that, they just go in there, go down, find a water pipe, connect, and just bring water up.
So for clarity, this is not supplied by the city?
No.
That water is not supplied
by
the city.
No, in the informal settlement, we only supply water tankers and static tanks, and that's where we fill water. Mm. So we provide them water in that fashion.
And those taps would be self, I don't know.
From time to time, we go into the informal settlement, remove, cut, but they always find a way of reconnecting illegally. And that is the problem. So I think from a long-term point of view, we then need to look at better solutions on how we provide services to informal settlements.
You've spoken about a program to start rolling out smart meters for water consumption.
Yes.
Let's just talk about that a bit.
Yeah, we think smart meters will go a long way, one, in helping us to manage consumption. Mm. They'll also go a long way in allowing the customers themselves to manage and monitor their consumption. Mm. It will also help us from a billing point of view and a revenue collection point of view. So we are trying to roll out as much smart meters as possible so that water is prepaid. It becomes even much easier if they are smart and also prepaid. So we're trying our level best, but it requires some revenue. But we think investing in meters, it will then help us to increase our collection in terms of our revenue collection.
So you know, you have aging infrastructure, which is a big problem. Leakages that are a big problem. And obviously us also not paying. You know, we just really struggling to pay. What are, I suppose, the strategic plans of getting the consumers ourselves to better manage our consumption, to better pay? Because I suppose at some level, all of us must get to some sort of an understanding of how the water resource is limited.
Yeah, it's education and awareness, Pimelo, that we have to do. And not only government, even on radio shows and all that stuff. Because, for example, we have to get to the habit that you don't have to open your tap to brush your teeth. You need a cup, fill it half with water, and brush your teeth. I'm just making simple examples, but you find people, they open up the whole tap just to brush the teeth, and they keep it open. And majority of us, we're guilty of that behavior. So we need to start with those behaviors for us to correct that we don't have water. It's a scarce resource, so our behavior must change completely. You've got people here in the town who open fire hydrants to take out water, to wash cars and taxis. Mm. It's a problem. So we need to find better ways. So you find people irrigating their gardens 2 o'clock during the day with the sun so hot, and it's a waste of water. And that is why we're encouraging them. If you want to water your garden, at least do it between 6 and 8 in the evening or 8 until at night. It's better because it's cooler at that time, so the water will be able to go where it has to go. So those are type of things that we have to do and encourage, of course, customers to take responsibility and pay for the services that are provided.
But it shouldn't be just one-sided. And only local government, for instance. We are establishing new townships all the time. Is it not possible for all the other departments to come to the party, for instance, even as they establish a new township, to say, when it comes to flushing of the toilet, can we use grey water instead? Because we are flushing away brand new clean water. Yes. And that comes in even the building of a structure, which we can start regulating from the onset.
Well, there are technologies, and it will require us also to amend the laws and regulations. But there are technologies out there in the world that can help us to actually do exactly what you're suggesting. There's been talks about it in every forums, in the municipality, we talk about it. I think we're at the point where we now have to action some of the brilliant ideas that we have around water conservation, which includes, amongst others, recycling of grey water within the household so that it can be used for other things, managing the amount of water that we use in the toilets and all sorts of things, including, amongst others, also how we recycle the water that gets to our treatment plants so that we get it to be cleaned to the level of human consumption.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to look at methods and technologies to help us. They are already there.
Mm.
It's just for us to begin to find the necessary resource, employ those resources, and the water we can then use, even the water from our treatment plants, because we normally take it back into the river, which I think we could save if we were to get it to the levels where it can be for human consumption.
Can we say that the festive season will be seamless as far as we can plan? I mean, nothing, we can't say 100% sure. But with regards to water supplies, can we say that this city will sort of have water?
No, we
won't. And there won't be any planned maintenance?
We will have. There will be no planned,
but maybe unforeseen circumstances.
Interruptions will be there, but in terms of planned maintenance, no issues. We'll ensure that we supply, but we're also experiencing a lot of bursting pipes. So we hope that it will be less in December. So if there's a pipe that bursts in an area, unfortunately, we have to come in, close the valves, fix, and then people will then have water. But we have increased our weekend teams. We have doubled our weekend teams at J-Water so that all the queries, the locked queries, can be attended to and not have to wait for Monday for them to be attended. So even in December, those teams will be on standby to be able to deal with those issues immediately.
Mr. Mayor, I really appreciate you giving us your time this evening. Maybe before you leave, your festive season message to the public.
Well, residents of Johannesburg, the Johannesburg Zoo is opened Thursdays to Sundays. We've got what we call the Festival of Lights. Please go there, take your family and the children. We think we'll also be doing a New Year's Eve party at the Soweto Theatre. So we're trying to offer this thing to our residents, to ask them to stay in Johannesburg and not leave, spend their time in Johannesburg and spend their money in Johannesburg so that we improve on our tourism, improve on all other issues that we have to put. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all the residents of Johannesburg.
Mayor of Johannesburg, Mayor Dada Morero, thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.